Come at the hour, come at the mothership. That is Coast to Coast AM. Hello, and welcome to the Saturday night edition I refer to occasionally as the Caravan to Midnight, that magic midnight thing when it's all a do-over, for better or worse. John D. Wells is who I am for those of you to whom it may matter. And tonight, two first-time guests, and we'll begin with an update before them from David Seaman. He was on a little earlier in the year. And he'll talk about the, he'll give us a quick update, the apathy of today's young people and people generally in the face of what some feel is government getting a little bit too big, a little bit too powerful, too restrictive, a little bit too dangerous, and the legal countermeasures being taken. Then Dr. Edward Farhi, PhD, Harvard, staff member of the Stanford Linear Accelerator at CERN, before going to MIT. Tonight's topic with him, the real science behind time travel and how this relates to a new film titled Looper. Wait a minute, I'm not through. Then Brett Luter, and we will discuss his new book, The UFO Hunter's Guide. And speaking of UFOs and UFO hunting, a big shout out to our friends in the Bay Area currently attending UFOCon. It's an event I'd planned to attend, but due to undisclosable reasons that go along with the undisclosable location, I've been compelled to fail my presence. If the planet remains reasonably intact, I'll be there next year. So what's this UFO thing, Wells? What do you mean? I'm not morphing into a UFO guy. A lot of people think I'm from another planet anyway. A few people wish I'd go back. But not me. I'm staying. More on that now. I want to give you a heads up on something. This is fun. I think that you may like it. It's a new television show set to air Saturday night, the 22nd, all over the country. Its name is Unsealed Alien Files. This is a very solid piece of work. How do I know this? Because I've been involved in the production since late April, early May. When you see this program, you may recognize the voice of the narrator. Then on the night of the 22nd, we'll talk with and take calls for the producers of the show, Unsealed Alien Files. So seriously, check local listings, because it's syndicated. It'll be shown on many channels. And after completing several episodes, you will hear and see some amazing things, I assure you. Some you may have heard about, and some you will have not. A quick little glance at the news. I got an email earlier. It was like, are you going to use this thing in the Middle East as an opportunity to do... It's like, no, but it's a really good idea. Let's just bypass that for just a moment. We'll get right back to it. Demanding a student's Facebook password, a violation of First Amendment rights, a judge says on September 6th, this decision was handed down in a suit. This is important. It was brought against the Minnewaska Area School District, Minnesota, dealing with a 12-year-old student who was coerced into giving school officials the password to her Facebook account. Cut a long story short, Judge Michael Davis ruled against it. In his decision, for more than 40 years, the United States courts, this is important because David Seaman is going to follow up on this, the courts in the United States have recognized that students do not check their First Amendment rights at the schoolhouse door. Safety does not trump rights, just as surely as policy does not trump, or at least shouldn't trump, common sense and proportionate responses. This is when I love the law again, and this judge. Judges are supposed to help people, and he did. More sniper ammunition being ordered by the DHS. Who are the targets? Well, you heard about all the 5.56 by 45, or otherwise interchangeable in some cases, with .223. Just a measly 40 million rounds in the first year, another 160 million rounds the following 4 years, 200 million rounds in total. But now they need bigger shots. They need the 308 caliber sniper rifle stuff. So this is a developing story as it gets vetted. Bring you more on that. But they're buying more ammo. There are a bunch of jumpy people in the security services, and they're buying lots of ammo. Here we go. Spinning off into left field. 33% of U.S. adults age 20 and older are overweight. 35.7% are obese. 35.7 and 6.3 are extremely obese, researchers say. Okay, you know what to do about that. Same thing my dad said. Don't eat so much. A Soviet K-27 submarine suffered a nuclear accident long before being dumped at the bottom of the Kara Sea 30 years ago. Russia may now have to lift the sub from dangerously shallow waters before an uncontrolled chain reaction causes fatal damage. Quote, radiation leakages will come sooner or later if we just leave the K-27 there. The sub has already been on the seafloor for 30 years, and it was rusty even before it was sunk. Leakages of radioactivity underwater are nearly impossible to clean up. Thomas Nielsen, nuclear safety expert, who has extensively mapped radioactive waste on the Arctic seabed, told a publication, RT, equipped with an experimental liquid coolant nuclear engine. The K-27 was ill-fated from its launch in 62, made three voyages, the last of which was in 68, ended in tragedy. I don't know, those experimental Russian liquid-cooled nuclear engines can be a little dicey sometimes. Then there's the Benghazi incident. Does anybody really believe that this was a film that went viral? Do you believe that? I know, I'm looking for a conspiracy behind every bush, because there is one behind almost every bush, but look here. Don't you just see false flag all over this? There's some stuff on InfoWars about it. The Los Angeles Times has something on it about this fellow who supposedly has been arrested. Nakula, Basili Nakula. He has an alias as well. This whole thing is so dicey. He's believed to use the alias Sam Basile. Okay, and then, well, the Office of Probation in the Central District of California was reviewing whether Nakula, who has been convicted on bank fraud charges, violated terms of his probation in relation to the video and its uploading onto the internet. He'd been ordered not to own or use devices with access to the internet without approval from his probation officer, and any unapproved computers, totally verboten. Any approved computers were to be used for work only. Quote, defendant shall not access a computer for any other purpose. Restrictions were also placed on him enlisting others to get on the internet for him. So it's like, oh, really? And this is his film. Okay. There was a joke in the old Soviet Union about the two state-run Moscow newspapers, Pravda, which means truth, and Izvestia, which means news. And this is the old joke. There is no truth in news, Russians used to say to each other. And there is no news in truth. Neyeruski. I'm not Russian, so let's see if we can get a little of each. So, tell you what let's do. Let's take our quick little break and get David Seaman on with us to let us know what is going on with the NDAA. Judge has said, no, this is not constitutional. The White House says, well, we can't compromise national security just because some judge says it's unconstitutional. Really? We'll be right back. This is the one and only Coast to Coast AM. David Seaman was last with us on, well, what, June 23rd this year, but he needs to come back on right now, and let's get a few minutes with him. He's a host of the David Seaman Hour on iTunes. He's an independent journalist, frequent contributor to all kinds of stuff. He's been on CNN, Fox, ABC, Digital, and a bunch of other ones. And some say he was recently censored by a certain large media corporation for posting just a little bit too much truth. Happens all the time. Come on board, David. How are you? Sorry it took so long. I couldn't shut the bleep up, so I delayed your coming on for a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, John.
What's going on with this NDAA and this is this the same judge who struck it down originally, or is this another judge that said this is unconstitutional, this indefinite detention thing?
This is the same judge, Catherine Forrest, a federal court judge in New York City. She earlier had issued a temporary injunction, and she just recently, earlier this week, made the injunction permanent, and that's why the Obama administration has responded with a plan to appeal this. Basically, what it comes down to is that while we've been distracted with all of our partisan bickering, you know, Republicans versus Democrats and this whole red versus blue team, the government has quietly drafted and signed into law some of the scariest things we've ever seen in our history as a nation. And the media has been mostly silent, and both parties are on board with this. And there's no doubt, I've been researching this for the past 9 months, there's no doubt that NDAA's Section 1021 allows for the imprisonment without trial of Americans on suspicion alone. And I think it's the number one most important story in the country right now. I mean, a close second would have to be that warrantless wiretapping stuff that's going on. Hundreds of millions of American citizens are having their phone calls and text messages, emails, and online activities being recorded by the government. Most of your listeners are probably subject to this. And the government's spending $2 billion alone on a new data center in Utah to handle this massive fire hose of information they're collecting on private citizens. But NDAA is even more important than that, because when you have a government that's allowed to just point the finger at anybody, including journalists or peaceful protesters or political opponents and opposition politicians, if they're just allowed to point the finger and say, hey, I think this guy might be a terrorist, we don't have to prove it because we have the NDAA. We no longer have to take them to court and show this in a court of law. We can just imprison them immediately using the military and leave them there. It's called indefinite detention, indefinitely, potentially for the rest of that person's life, without access to legal representation, without the right to a trial, which is like the basis of our whole system. The Constitution guarantees us certain things, and one of those things is a speedy trial and due process.
Yeah, things are trying to become more the way they were than they ever were before. I'm certain that that's not a good thing. You know, this combined with this idea that's being bandied about that insisting on Second Amendment rights constitutes a mental illness. If you combine an accusation that, well, your proclivity for whatever, Twinkies, constitutes a mental illness, and you combine that with the ability for the military to arrest you with no phone call lawyer or really not even letting anybody know where you are, why is everybody sitting around for this, David? Because a lot of them are, except for that one little group that went up there to that judge's court and filed a suit, and she responded.
I can't tell you why. It's like people almost don't believe it, and the problem is if we don't start believing it, it's going to be too late to do anything. This is now the second time the Obama administration is fighting for the so-called right to indefinitely detain Americans, as if that's a right any president should have, no matter how competent. And by the way, to indefinitely detain anyone else around the world, not just American citizens, using military force. You can be put in prison for years as a result of this law. And why there's not mainstream outrage from every single person who finds out about this is honestly beyond me. This should be the most viral story in the United States. The fact that it's not making it to the evening network news, that shouldn't really matter, because everybody nowadays has Facebook and email and Twitter. So we can get the word out ourselves. And it's not as if it's a theory. This was covered in the New York Times. The ACLU considers this one of their top priorities. And they're a liberal, they're a liberal-leaning organization. And they've come out strongly against this. Amnesty International has labeled it a threat to liberty. And you're seeing organizations on the left and the right, Occupy Wall Street on the left, and groups like the Tea Party on the right are terrified of this, because they know that something like this will totally end America's tradition of protest and free speech, and not just, you know, tradition, our laws that those things are allowed, you know. It'll be the end. You start detaining people and that's it. Game's over.
David, it's almost as though we just kind of want to try it out. It's like, you know, we really haven't had any action here since the Civil War, you know, where our own countrymen, albeit in different color uniforms, were, you know, lying around with their, it was just the crossover between shock warfare and somewhat modern warfare. It was horrible. And so maybe we ought to just go ahead and descend into something crazy, kind of try it out. And I remind people that, who say, oh, you're a crazy right winger. I get that more than I get you're a crazy left winger. But I have a lot of people email me saying, hey, John, this is one of your lefty fans, you know, and it's like, bless you, because they get it. It's like, it doesn't matter. It's not left or right. That left-right stuff is a way of keeping us distracted, and it's working pretty well. And I don't understand why every city in this country, certainly the top 10, would be doing something about this, file a suit. You know, what would the response be if all of a sudden there were 500 or 1,000 lawsuits against this? I guess they'd have to take it away. This routine breaking of the Constitution. And this is where I take a poke at George W. Bush. I don't think that Patriot Act helped us at all, not a bit. It just laid the groundwork for what's happening now, which is every security service is arming up to the teeth because they're expecting something. And I think it's probably going to be when we all cop to what they're doing and resist, they'll be ready for us.
Well, you now have it becoming mainstream knowledge that the banks extracted trillions of dollars of our money, taxpayer money, to prop themselves up during the financial crisis. And for most people, that hasn't really helped them. You know, the foreclosure thing is still going on. my whole generation, the vast majority of us are underemployed or unemployed. So you have a lot of unhappy people in this country. And instead of the government addressing their grievances and dealing with it, they're treating protesters as terrorists. And you're seeing the introduction of laws like these. And it's a scary, dark road to go down. Because in South America, I think in the early 80s, Argentina had the Dirty War, where they just started taking political protesters and dissidents, supposedly, drugging them, tying weights to them, and then throwing them off of airplanes into the ocean so there'd be no evidence of what they had done, and just disappearing people. That's what it was known as, was disappearing. And something like NDAA is not that far away from that, when they can take you and put you in a prison and not give you access to a lawyer. It's not very far away.
When you find out, as these programs go on, and we find out the fines that banks pay when they get caught running money through from places they shouldn't be running it through, such as drug cartels, for example, they just pay a fine. Nobody goes to jail. They just, operation doesn't skip a beat. They just keep going. When you roll all of this together, and you see the writing on the wall in the forms of peace officers and law and order, those expressions are gone. Now it's law enforcement, which has a little bit more edge to it, don't you think? It seems to me that we're just being gradually conditioned and dumbed down to accept it. And, of course, everybody wants to cover their money first. They want their own prosperity covered. They just don't seem to be binding together as a nation, because they're continually victimized by this division. I'm done ranting. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. It's so sad. Every time I have to fly, they have these full body scanners, which are just there because of lobbying contracts, because they're making a lot of money off these scanners. They're expensive. And they expose you to backscatter radiation. This has been proven unsafe, or at least they think it's unsafe. They've been banned in Europe. These scanners are banned in European airports as per a European Union ban. And here in the U.S., every time I have to go through one of those things, I point to the opt-out sign saying you have the option to opt out. And I say, I'd like to opt out. And I explain why. I say, you know, I read a lot of articles that this level of radiation repeated times is not safe for you. And I don't want it, you know. So I always assume after I opt out, the passengers behind me will, you know, monkey see, monkey do. They'll go, okay, this guy had the guts to turn down something that is unconstitutional and potentially dangerous to your body. But everybody else just goes right through, blank look on their face, and they just go right through, and they even thank them. They say thank you, as if that thing is keeping you safe, as if being shot full of radiation is keeping you safe, or being forced to take off your shoes, or having orders barked at you after you just paid $200 for a flight to get to your business meeting in time.
Uh-oh. We still got you? I think he's... you're back. Uh-oh. Oh, yeah, that was a definite drop. Command says the man has dropped. She's going to get him back. You know, this probably seems, as someone once said, disingenuous. No. Every time we have controversial guests on, or I start popping off about controversial subjects, we start having electronic phenomenon. And that's just the plain truth of it. It's either that or one devil of a coincidence. It's pretty amazing. You know, he mentioned something that made me think of something, and you will enjoy hearing this while we get him back on the line. Did you know the U.S. exempted Japan and 10 EU nations from Iran oil sanctions? A message is being sent to China, India, and South Korea that they can avoid new U.S. sanctions by curtailing their imports of Iranian crude by the end of June. This was posted March 21st. Anybody heard anything about this? Anyway, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. I don't know what happened there. That was weird.
Pesky NSA again.
I didn't mean to go off on my crazy TSA rant, but it is just scary that more people don't know what's going on. And they don't seem to care. You have less and less rights. You have state troopers now who have license plate readers on their cars. They're rapidly scanning all these plates going by, and it sends off an alert on their laptop. Even if you're just something as minor as, you know, your tag has come due and you haven't paid your bill yet, they are alerted to that, and then they can follow you and pull you over. We're turning into, for lack of a better word, we're turning into a police state, and we have to keep a very close eye on.
Well, you know, on Facebook, somebody wanted to, somebody reported being, having to repel a, you know, an intruder, and they were trying to type in there that, well, having a firearm can be a comfort sometimes, and Facebook wouldn't accept the words fire followed by arm.
Yeah, one of the problems with Facebook is when you, instead of relying on millions of sites, when we start to rely on only a few sites and only a few companies for all of our communication online, it becomes easier for various entities to make mass communication difficult. There have been random reports that Facebook makes it difficult to share certain kinds of articles. I don't know if that's true, but I don't have any reason to believe it's not true.
Kind of looks that way. David, we got to go. I want to bring you back for a longer chat next time, but thank you very much. Stay on top of this thing, and please stay in touch with me and Coast to Coast AM, will you?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Take care. Me too. All right. Dr. Edward Farhi is next. We will carry him past the top of the next hour, and we hope you will stay tuned. This is Coast to Coast AM. Thank you very much. Delighted to be with you tonight. Is time travel really possible? How far away are we from a real time machine? How much of the science in the film Looper is based in reality? Let's find out. We're going to take our quick floating break right now and have a nice long chat with Dr. Edward Farhi, a bright man, a rational man, a real no-kidding scientist, and a first-time guest. We shall be just right back. Let's do it. Dr. Edward Farhi went to the Bronx High School of Science and Brandeis University, Brandeis University, before getting his PhD from Harvard in 78. He was then on the staff at the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center and at CERN in Geneva, Switzerland, before coming to MIT, where he joined the faculty in 82. He has given lectures on his own research at many of the major physics research centers in the world. At MIT, he taught undergraduate courses in quantum mechanics and special relativity. At the graduate level, he has taught quantum mechanics, quantum field theory, particle physics, and general relativity. He has won 3 teaching awards at MIT, and in 2000, 01, and 02, he lectured the Big Freshman Physics Course 8.01. In July 2005, he was appointed the director of MIT's Center for Theoretical Physics. It is an honor to have you on the program. Sorry about the delay. I got carried away. Welcome, Dr. Farhi.
Thank you very much. It's going to be fun to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what. I could ask you all of the obtuse questions I could think of and just be delighted to see what came back. What's all this about this film Looper? And it's based on some sort of time travel, and there's some real science behind it.
Some of it's real and some of it isn't. The idea in the movie is that there are people who can go back and forth in time. They can shoot forward in time, skip into the future, and return back to the present. And that some of that's real and some of it isn't. It certainly can stimulate a lot of thought, the ability to go forward and come back, because you could certainly imagine that if you could go back in time now and return to the present, you could change the past, and that would alter the present, and that would sort of be an awesome thing to do. But of course, it would lead to all kinds of paradoxes, like you could go back in time and kill your parents before they met and made you, and then how could you possibly exist?
What did your research suggest that time travel is possible or impossible?
Okay, well, first of all, before my research, about a little over 100 years ago, Albert Einstein showed definitively that time, which we, in our ordinary experience, we think of time as this ever-flowing thing where our hearts beat, we watch the clock move, life goes on, we live and die according to the flow of time. But Einstein showed that the flow of time was relative, and that meant that if you are going at a high speed, for example, the rate at which your clocks run are different than the rate at which clocks run which are stationary. And Einstein proposed this in 1905 as part of his theory of relativity, and he wrote down mathematical equations to describe this. And I should say that since that time, everything that Einstein said has been verified. By that I mean it's consistent with everything that we've seen in the laboratory. And all practicing physicists believe in the theory of relativity and believe that the rate at which clocks run depends upon how fast they're moving. Now, when I say how fast they're moving, the effect only becomes dramatic if you're moving close to the speed of light. And the speed of light is 186,000 miles a second. So, you know, we don't experience in our ordinary lives things moving that fast. Even rockets are not going very close to the speed of light. And so, if you're going not close to the speed of light, if you're going slowly, there are small changes in the rate at which clocks run. But if you're going close to the speed of light, it's much more dramatic. And, you know, for example, if you use GPS in your car, how does GPS work? Well, your GPS works by triangulation with satellites. There are satellites going around the Earth, and your car communicates with those satellites, and it locks onto your position. But when it does that, it has to time very carefully. You need to know how long it takes for a light beam or a radio wave or a signal to go from your car to the satellite, and there's a clock on the satellite. And the clocks on the satellites are running at a slightly different rate because they're moving than clocks on the Earth. And if we didn't take into account relativity, then your car, you would be driving off the road. So there are actually practical implications of the fact that clocks run at different rates. And
science, isn't that amazing? So you're saying that there really is no universal time. There are only local times.
Yeah, that's right. Time. It was Einstein who said it. I mean, I'm just quoting what he said. That's why he was one of the great scientists of all time.
Well, we get that.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, to realize that time was something that depended upon the speed of the clock.
Well, that sort of means it's a thing, doesn't it? It's not a state, it's a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, it's hard to, I mean, I say, what is time? Time is what a clock measures. But a clock could be your pulse, or a clock could be your heart rate. Your heart rate, it could be your biological clock. You know, and maybe that's not a very accurate clock in the sense that, you know, you wouldn't want to time a rocket launch with someone's heartbeat, but it's still a clock. And it turns out that if you were to go close to the speed of light, I could put you, John, on a rocket and send you up into space, and you could come back to Earth, and you would say that maybe 1 year has passed on your trip, and you've gone pretty far away from Earth and returned, and a year has passed. But when you got back, it could be that 100 years have passed on Earth.
Really?
Yes. And that no one doubts this in physics. And you could then, you know, greet your great-grandchildren, and you could say, I'm your, you know, great-grandfather, and it's very nice to meet you.
Well, I'm from the future, and I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Well, you're from the past, and you're not kidding, because you would end up there, and you would
be from the
past. Not from the future, you're from the past, right? Because you, John, you come, and you meet your great-grandchildren, and you know, they look at you and say, you know, you're not that old, and you say, that's right, because I just took a long... Well, to you, a long trip, to me, a short trip in a rocket close to the speed of light, and here I am. And so that kind of, I call that skipping into the future. And the laws of physics allow it. And also, like, if you go to a giant particle accelerator, which where they accelerate particles very close to the speed of light, if they did not take into account that the clocks on those particles are running at a different rate, the accelerator would not work. So, you know, we really do know that this can happen. It's just that it's much more extreme if you go close to the speed of light. People have never gone close to the speed of light. But there's no real reason why you couldn't build a rocket that takes you close to the speed of light. It's technologically challenging, but it's not against any laws of physics. And so, yeah, I could say you could go on a trip and come back 100 years in the future. You know, your children and their children would have passed away, maybe, and you would reach your grandchildren or great-grandchildren.
And that's Doctor,
kind of amazing. Yeah.
Let's go into UFO land for a minute. Let's just say that they do exist, and these are extraordinarily high-speed vehicles.
Yeah.
Does that mean that those vehicles are the actual time machines? I mean, I'm sure if you guys are studying this stuff on the level that you're studying it, I'm sure someone has been working on a real time machine for a long time.
Well, let me just say one thing. Usually when people use the word a time machine, they mean something that can go backward in time. And, you know, when I said that you could take a trip into the future and you could land in the year 2100, and yet only a year would have passed according to you, you could go there. But according to the laws of physics, as we understand them, you could not return. You couldn't come back to the present. And so you would be stuck in the future.
So you could go to the past. Yeah, I had dyslexia of the intellect a minute ago. So you could actually be from the past, but actually being from the future would be the hard part.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, because, you see, just like that's right, you can't, as far as we understand, and I could talk more about why we believe that, but so I could send you into the future, but you couldn't come back now then to the present. And, of course, if you could come back to the present from the future, then you would be able to go into the past now. And, you know, going into the past has that little problem, which is that if you could go into the past, you could presumably affect things which are taking place now. And we tend to think that that's just not okay, because it would lead to all kinds of what we call logical paradoxes, which is, of course, like I said before, you could go back in time. You know, if you could go back now 100 years, you could kill your grandparents.
Right.
And that would be very hard then to understand how you came into being. So that's what, you know, so we physicists tend to think that that's not okay to go back in time. There's really no evidence that you can go back. Well, there's no, but we're absolutely certain you can skip into the future. So usually when people talk about time machines, they make it have the ability to go back and forth, because they want to go into the future and return, or they want to go into the past and return. And then, of course, you know, if you go see a movie, it can make for a great plot, or it can make things pretty exciting if you could do that.
You know, it's interesting that sort of, it seems to lend the suggestion of credibility to the existence of ghosts, because they're invariably from the past. So,
yeah, well, from the past is better, right? Yeah, I mean, if someone, yeah, that's, you know, something coming from the past. Well, the past, you know, in some sense, the past exists as present memory. You know, we're aware of the past. You can read about the past. You can see movies from the past. You can, you know, you can watch documentaries about the past. And, you know, the past, in some sense, has an existence in the present, I would say, because we have a record of it, and you can experience the past, but experiencing the future is a lot tougher.
I'm sorry, I can't move off of this. Do you fellas, that I say you fellas, what I mean is you geniuses who study this stuff, study things that would take me a lifetime to understand even part of it. Do you think the problem is going, you can send somebody in the future, but you can't send them back? Do you think that's because, at least our consciousness, the consciousness we have of our reality, suggests that we are moving continually forward into the future?
Yeah.
So there really is no future for us. There's only moment to moment.
Yeah, well that's right. We're presently, you know, you and I right now as we speak, we're traveling into the future. We just, you know, we can't help it.
Yeah, we're not there yet, though.
Yeah, but we're always, you know, sort of, okay, we're always on the way to the future. Every instant we're, you know, a second closer. But when you skip into the future, then, you know, you might say it just took you 10 seconds, and I would say it took an hour for two things to occur. And then, you know, that means that, you know, you've got to the future a little faster than I have. So, you know, we're always progressing forward, both of us. All people, all things, all physical phenomena are progressing forward, but they can do it at different rates. And this is not, when I say different rates, I'm not talking about it appears at a different rate. It's the actual experience of time. It affects all your biological function. It's the actual measurement of time. It's the rate at which time flows. It's not like looking at a movie and, you know, which you've sped up or slowed down, which, you know, we can see as an illusion. It's the actual flow of time itself.
Let me ask you something. Let's just be a couple of guys here for a second instead of a talk show host and a like off the charts scholar. And I'm not patronizing you. I'm looking at your bona fides right now. What do you think, as just a couple of guys talking, would be the easiest and most rudimentary explanation for being able to, under some phenomenal condition, go from point A to point B, which should take 4 hours at 50 miles an hour,
right. But
you make it in 2 hours and 40 minutes?
Right.
What crazy extrapolation could account for something like that?
Well, you know, you really have to understand that, for example, it was what Einstein showed is that the whole notion of space and time is relative. It's not just that time is different when you're moving, but distances are different too. So, for example, you know, the center of the galaxy is what we say 10,000 light years away. 10,000 light years is the distance it takes light to go in 10,000 years. So a light year is a distance. It's how far light goes in a year. And so when we say the center of the galaxy is 10,000 light years away, it means a light ray, we would measure of light rays taking 10,000 years to come. But if you were to go really fast, you could get to the center of the galaxy according to your clocks in much, much less time. But the only way that can actually happen is if you see the distance to the center of the galaxy is contracted. So not only in order to make sense of all of this, you not only have to have time change when you move fast, but so does distance. So the distance that you go, if you were going to the center of a galaxy, if you were going fast enough, you might just say it's one light year away, not 10,000 light years. And that's why you could transverse it quicker. Now, of course, that doesn't really help you. I've just pushed the problem to another thing. I said instead of the time taking less time for you, I said the distance you go is shorter. That's also very hard to fathom, that the actual distance between two points could depend on the speed of the observer. Again, this was Einstein's great insight that all these, even measurements of distance, could depend on speed. And he means the actual physical distance. It's not an illusion. It's not the things, you know, if you hold up something and I move it away from you, it looks smaller. You know, the sun looks small in the sky, but we know it's very, very large because it's far away. That's just an illusion. But when we talk about when we're talking about things now in relativity, we're talking about the actual distance you travel. But, you know, it's very hard to make sense of these things based on our common experience. And that's the great thing about science. Science says we are not going to understand the world simply as a projection of what we think. Rather, we're going to observe the world. And what we observe about the world very often is more strange than anything we could imagine. And, you know, that's why being a scientist is so exciting, and why the scientific approach, I think, is really wonderful, because it makes you realize that instead of saying, you know, it can't be that way, you try to examine the world with a very open mind. And when you do that, you discover that it really is not the way it appears to be based upon your experience. It's not really that way out there. It's not that way on very small distances where you have atomic phenomenon. The world doesn't look the way it looks to us. If you're moving fast, if you're moving close to the speed of light, things look really different. And it's very hard to grasp that unless you start to wrap your head around the actual experiments that are done with things moving fast, or in laboratories where people create conditions that are not really the conditions you and I experience, let's say eating our breakfast and getting in the car, but they go in the laboratory and they create new conditions, and then they see that the world is not really the way it appears to be in our ordinary experience. I don't know if that helps.
That's unbelievable. You know, I ran the program a little bit late earlier, and I was wondering, could I persuade you to stay with us for just a few minutes past the top of the hour?
Sure.
So we can just ask a couple more questions and hear some more of your most singular narrative tonight. And thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Sure. Edward Fahey. Oh, boy. I want to find out how much of his work deals with time travel at MIT. This is the one and only Coast to Coast AM.